This is KUCR Radio, 88.3 FM, broadcasting from the University of California at Riverside. We suffered a tragedy here at the University of California, Riverside, a couple of weeks ago with the passing of Professor Lyndon W. Barrett. He's a professor in the College of Humanities, Arts, and Social Sciences in the English department. He was a member of the Critical Theory Institute at the University of California, Irvine. He has many connections between UC Riverside and UC Irvine. And we're in a few moments going to join our sister station at the University of California, Irvine, KUCI, with host Dan Tsang in a tribute to Professor Lyndon Barrett, who will be greatly missed here at the University of California. Please stand by. We now join KUCI in a tribute to Dr. Lyndon Barrett.
On KUCR in Riverside, we're going to do a tribute to Lyndon Barrett, a professor at UC Riverside and formerly at UC Irvine. Coming up, stay tuned. This is Dan Tsang here. Today we're going to be remembering the life and scholarly work of Lyndon Barrett, who tragically passed away about 2 weeks ago now, actually. And with us in the studio, a group of his friends and colleagues, and we just played a segment of a song from the Supremes. And Fred Moten, a friend of Lyndon, writes, "One night at about 4 a.m., after a lot of wine and scotch, one of us, I don't remember which, said that, come see about me was surely the Supremes' greatest song and one of the great works of art of the 20th century. And the other just nodding as if it was the most obvious thing in the world." So today we're going to be looking back at his life and how he started in academia. And with us, a number of colleagues calling in, we have Catherine Kinney, who's the chair of the English department, George Haggerty, who's a colleague in the English department at Riverside, both of them at Riverside, and Winston James, who heads the African American Studies program here at UCI and a historian in the history department. And with us in the studio, Arnold Pan, Winston was his dissertation advisor, and he's now finished his PhD, and Leila Nedi, who was also a graduate student here under Lyndon, and also a former undergraduate at UCI and now a graduate student at UC Riverside, Jamie Park. Welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Thanks
for having me.
Thanks. I was going to ask maybe Catherine, you went to school with Lyndon at Penn.
Yes, I did.
What was that like?
Well, Lyndon was a couple of years behind me in graduate school at Penn, but, you know, I've been thinking obviously a lot about it since. I've heard from all kinds of people we went to school with. But I think what I remember most is how kind of new and exciting a field African-American literature was at the time, and to think about how different the field is today because of people like Lyndon. You know, when we were in graduate school, a lot of the work we did was to sit in the reserve room and read what were basically rare books, which we now think of as the basic works of African American literature. And When Lyndon was out last year and did did a talk at Riverside, it was about the origin of the slave trade and the colonial powers dividing up territory and Utrecht and Descartes and how important slavery was to the whole basis of Western philosophy. And I sat there thinking how amazing it was that we had gone from this kind of very tight place of trying to just make African-American literature present to this really rich, viable place where it was absolutely central to how we think about everything in literature and philosophy. And, you know, to say that, Lyndon was the same warm and funny person then that we all knew here. He was a little more serious in his self-presentation. He carried a briefcase with a handle that I always thought was really impressive in graduate school.
Did he wear a tie?
I have a vivid memory of him in his three-piece suit.
That's hard to imagine.
It must have been the day we were doing mock interviews for the job market. And then when I saw him when he was first at Irvine and he was wearing in those days two different color Converse, I was like, oh, okay. He's embraced California wholeheartedly. But he was just a rare, unique, strong person.
So this was at a time when we were still uncovering the history.
Oh, yeah.
And so it was very kind of, he was a pioneer.
Yeah, he was. And he wasn't, there was a lot of important work just getting books back in print and, you know, doing the first publishing, the first kinds of essays. I remember when Lyndon published his essay on Billie Holiday's autobiography, you know, what a real breakthrough that was. But he just didn't stop there. I mean, the whole world was open.
We have actually a tribute from John Roberts, who was Lyndon's PhD advisor.
John Roberts writes, "I will always remember Lyndon as a young man who had the courage to look beneath the surface of things, the curiosity to probe them deeply, and the intellect to examine them critically. He was never content with simply knowing. He wanted to understand not beyond reason, but rather in a reasonable way. From my first meeting with him early in his career as a graduate student to the completion of his dissertation at Penn, he never ceased to amaze me with his willingness to expand his grasp of the intellectual terrain that he wanted to cover. Though a Canadian by residence, he demonstrated constantly the tough-minded, hard-working West Indian temperament and ethic that he had inherited from his devoted parents, and of which he remained very proud. Perhaps this is why he worked so hard to bring new understandings, to develop new approaches, and to instill respect for what it has meant and continues to mean to be of African heritage in what we call the New World. His devotion to this work was not merely an academic exercise. It was an act of love for family and community of nurture, a giving back for all he had been given."
Yeah, thank you, Leila. Yeah, and he stayed, after he graduated, he came pretty soon to UC Irvine, and he was here for over a decade. I remember he lived in University Hills, and there was actually an altercation with another professor, which is kind of funny in retrospect, because the professor charged over to his house, to Lyndon's house, knocked on the door, and here Lyndon opens the door, and the guy says, is the man of the house here? Is the master of the house here? And I don't know if it's, Lyndon was telling me that he probably didn't know if, I mean, he wasn't sure if the guy was saying that because he looked young or he was black. And he was, did the guy think he was the housekeeper there? And so this was in the early days when, you know, the diversity hadn't really reached Irvine at the time. So it was quite quite a strong impression on people. And I just got an email from another former graduate student who said he really admired Lyndon for standing up to this professor, who since has left, is no longer at UCI, this other professor. So we have actually another commentary from John Rowe, who actually knew him a long time also here at Irvine.
This is a message from John Rowe. Lyndon was one of my closest friends and one of the intellectuals for whom I have the greatest respect. We knew each other for 20 years and worked together to diversify the educational curricula at the University of California, Irvine, as well as in the broader profession. We did much of this work as faculty in English and then in African American Studies, the academic program Lyndon founded with Thelma Foote in 1994, and which has since become one of the most innovative and intellectually exciting African-American studies programs in the U.S. Lyndon taught me a great deal about intellectual matters and even more about life. I learned from him that African-Americans have represented themselves in ways that include but also exceed considerably the printed books so respected in contemporary academic circles. Music, dance, oral folklore, parades, cooking, clubbing, talking, loving, singing are as important, sometimes more important. Learning that has brought me new wisdom and great joy, as did Lyndon Barrett.
And John Rowe is now at USC, where he chairs the American Studies and Ethnicity Program, and he's a professor emeritus here at Irvine. How did some of you get to meet him? Can you maybe recall the beginning, the first time you met Lyndon? Arnold?
Oh, well, I took a course with Lyndon my very first quarter here at UCI when I started the PhD program, and it was in African American literature. And at that time, I had really no idea what I was going to specialize in, probably something in critical theory. But, you know, taking Lyndon's class and just getting to know Lyndon really changed the direction of what I was studying. And, you know, eventually I completed my dissertation, which was focused on U.S. modernism and African-American and Asian-American culture during the early 20th century. So Lyndon had a huge impact on me right from the beginning. And, you know, he was one of the professors who really, yeah, I think we would all agree here that took students under his wing, and you know, he really cared about his students. And
yeah, that's clear from the press reports also and the blogs,
right?
The people have been quoted in blogging, in the blogs, reacting to this. Yeah,
I actually came to Lyndon fairly late in my graduate work. The first time I met Lyndon was actually when I wrote to him asking if he had a TA-ship available, and it became probably the greatest experience of my graduate work here. I worked with Lyndon for two quarters on classes in the Harlem Renaissance and Harlem and Bloomsbury, and really came to know Lyndon when I was running out of funding, and Lyndon, of course, came to my rescue, providing for me a GSR, a research project, which spanned two quarters. And in these two quarters, I spent researching the history of major African-American studies departments throughout the nation. And the second quarter, I spent researching major figures within the discipline. And at first, I thought, what a peculiar project to undertake. And I was very grateful, of course, for it having freed up space and time for me to do my work. But I, of course, continue to learn from Lyndon. And the more I think about that project, the more I realize that what it was really about was making sure that I was aware of the massive history of African-American studies in this country and the ways in which the discipline itself comes out of the history of the Cold War and in a sort of reaction against various area studies programs and the ways in which they were conscripted in the service of the state. And just really making a space for me to learn my own position within the academy and the importance that African American studies has played within all of our studies. And as I've been writing to various people, notifying them over the past week, what I realize is that Lyndon is such a huge part of that discipline. And it's because of that project, really, that I've kind of come to appreciate exactly how major a figure he has been. And that's really how I came to know Lyndon.
Yeah, for sure. That was Leela Nedi.
I owe a lot to Amy, my good friend. She was a year above me in the English department when I was an undergrad at Irvine. And she would not stop talking about him. She's like, you got to take his classes. He's amazing. She sort of introduced me to him. But yeah, I took a couple of his classes. I think the class that really had the most impact on me was the Hughes and Schuyler class. And of course, my writing sample for my graduate application came out of that class. Yeah, and I was kind of scared that he wouldn't remember me, but a couple of my friends said, no, you know, I think if you approached him, he would. You would be surprised at, you know, how much professors remember their students, and he was very generous. You know, he took out time during the summer to help me with my whole application, so.
And you followed him to Riverside?
Yeah, as I was coming to my decision, I had heard that he had taken a position there from another professor who I was in contact with at Riverside, Dr. Lopez. The decision was, it wasn't a decision anymore. I already knew where I wanted to go. So he made it really easy for me.
That's great. Yeah.
Oh, I just wanted to add a couple things. I think, you know, based on what both Leela and Jamie were saying, I thought, you know, one thing that's really important to, you know, mention about Lyndon is that, you know, he was a great mentor to all of us, but I think one of the things that, you know, really speaks to him as not just his, you know, important place within African American studies, but the way in which he nurtured his students and gave us space to do our own research. In many ways, Lyndon, despite being very, very close to us, you know, really didn't want us to replicate him. He didn't want us to just repeat after what he had done before, but he really encouraged us to go in the directions we wanted to go in, and, you know, he followed us in some ways. You know, I remember, you know, working on my dissertation and meeting him, and he had read, you know, a book that was probably something that he may not have read before, but he read the whole thing just so that he could go page by page and tell me, like, things I should add or readings that I had kind of skimmed over that could have been more complex. I think that's one of the things, is that, you know, we all learned a lot from Lyndon, but also that Lyndon was, you know, a great advisor in, you know, letting us do what, you know, he thought we should, you know, pursue on our own. And I think the other thing, you know, and I think Jamie is a good testament to this, is how many students of Lyndon's, as, you know, he had met as undergrad, when they were undergrads, went to grad school. We received a lot of entries from undergraduate students from UCI who had, you know, worked with Lyndon as an undergrad, and then were telling, you know, people on these blogs how they had pursued graduate studies because of Lyndon. And it, you know, it's hard to believe, considering how young Lyndon was, that he has students that he worked with as undergrads at UCI, and even, you know, he tutored as a grad student at Penn, who are now professors. So I think that's really also speaks to what kind of, you know, example Lyndon was to everyone.
Yeah, and I would also like to add, in terms of the nurturing that Lyndon did for all of us, it's also important to, I think, mention the ways in which his influence exceeded the academic, and the ways in which we all came to realize that Lyndon has really embodied and practiced a real politics of pleasure, and he's passed that along to all of us, I think. Some of my best memories of Lyndon are not in the classroom or necessarily very formal, but they're of things like dancing in an Orange County parking lot together or, you know, just hanging out and enjoying life together. And the amazing thing about Lyndon is that that never ceased to be both an ultimately pleasurable activity, but also a deeply intellectual one. And his part of what amazed me about Lyndon was the ways in which there was always such an intense connection for him between those two things, between the rigorously intellectual and the utterly pleasurable. And that, to me, is something that I take with me.
George Haggerty, how did you first meet him?
Well, I met Lyndon right after he came to UCI because I had colleagues here, Jennifer Brody and others, who knew him, and we would go, you know, we'd be at conferences together and so on, so I knew him for a long time. I couldn't believe our luck when he applied to our job here. It was amazing. His job talk was amazing, as Catherine said, and then when he came here, he just took the place by storm. I mean, he was so brilliant. He was so friendly, so collegial, and we all just fell for him. He was just the most wonderful colleague. And he would attend talks, you know, people do sometimes outside their field, and ask the most interesting questions of anyone in the room. He just really was a wonderful, just a wonderful presence on campus. The dean was really impressed with him when he had his interview before Lyndon was appointed and followed his progress here and was devoted to him as well. So, you know, he really transformed the department. We were thinking of Lyndon as the future, really. He was such an important addition to the department, and we thought, this is great. We can, you know, move ahead in these fields, and we do have some depth in African American, and it was just wonderful to have such a perfect senior hire.
You had a book project with him. He was an advisor on your on the advisory board for your encyclopedia project.
That's right, and he was also very much interested in other people's work. He came and asked to see work of mine that he hadn't read, and took my book and gave me helpful comments, which, you know, colleagues say, oh, your work is great, but they don't usually read your whole book. So, you know, he really did an extra amount, and it was just because he seemed to be excited to be here. Mm-hmm. And he was on the advisory board when I did the Encyclopedia of Gay Histories and Cultures, and he was great help with that project.
He also went to in 2000, he went to a conference that was summarized in Kalaloo on queer studies, on black queer studies. And so he was one of the people that did this kind of intervention, kind of critically, of queer studies, trying to place it with black studies.
The kind of groundbreaking work he did in combining those two fields, it's on a par with Rod Ferguson and others who have done trying to combine black and queer studies, and that's been a real important intervention. I mean, it's the latest move in these fields, is to think about how they intersect. And the intersections are the thing that really make a huge difference to people working in both fields. And I think Lyndon was uniquely placed in order to make, not only being in both fields, but being as smart as he was, he could move us all forward, a big, giant step.
We also have with us on the phone Winston James, who is head of the African American Studies program after Lyndon here at UC Irvine. How did you meet him, Winston?
I met him in 2005, but let me first of all sort of correct a little error there. I became the head of the program in 2007, and I actually stepped down at the end of the current academic year. Continue. So I'm not
not currently.
I actually resigned in June, and it came into effect on the 1st of July. So I'm not the head or the director of the program in African American Studies. So just for the record, I met Lyndon in 2005 in the sort of spring, or what you would call here the winter quarter, in 2005. I was invited by the history department to give a job talk, and Lyndon attended. And as usual, of course, everybody knows he would sit at the back of the room.
he did.
and so that's where it started. You know, we met afterwards, and I met with the other faculty in African American Studies during that process, during that visit, and that's where it all began. I became deeply involved in African American Studies once I arrived at UCI in fall of 2005, and was sort of associate director alongside Lyndon during that period. And then, as I said, I became the director in 2007, after Lyndon decided to leave. That's how I met him.
How do you what do you see as his contribution to the field?
His contribution is quite immense. You have his intellectual output, his publications in a wide range of areas relating to African American studies. But you also have his contribution to institution building, which John Rowe referred to, the sort of struggles that he was engaged in at UCI to build and protect the program in African American Studies. And I have to say that during his time at UCI, and certainly during the time that I have been there, which is only recent, only in 3 years, Lyndon was very, very, very embattled with the institution, unfortunately, and I think the way in which he was treated at the end of that process was quite shameful. But so that is one of the contributions that he made. He was very vigorous in defending the program, very energetic in mentoring junior faculty and recruiting for the program in African American Studies, and trying to make sure that there was a sort of environment in which people could do important and valuable work.
Is there a shift? Do you see a shift from supporting ethnic studies programs to more discipline-based, like history programs, rather than these separate programs? More separate ethnic programs. Is that the university's role now? How they're doing it?
Well, I'm not quite sure if that is what they're trying to do. Certainly, what Lyndon was trying to do was to create a vibrant African American Studies program at UCI. But I'm not quite sure. I take it that what you're asking is whether or not the institution is still behind that project. Is that what you're?
Yeah. You see, generally, do universities, are they moving away from the institutions that were started in the 60s? Are they now moving away to make it more institutionalized, or ignoring them and just doing other stuff?
I don't know what the general terrain is there in terms of other institutions. I'm not quite sure what the project is at UCI, but I do believe that the program is located in the School of Humanities, and it does have the support of the dean of School of Humanities at the moment at UCI.
It definitely does, yeah. And the dean did send out a statement, Vicky Ruiz, on Lyndon.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
But you think that's the reason he left?
It was do with the fact that I don't think he got the level of recognition and respect that he ought to have had from the previous team, basically.
Why are so many people going to Riverside? Mike Davis is in Riverside, has just left for Riverside also. Is it hard to be progressive and in Orange County?
Well, it's hard to be progressive anywhere. I'm not quite sure it's easier to be progressive at Riverside, frankly. I don't know. I mean, I think Mike's move to Riverside is perhaps quite different, but I know that Lincoln's quite embattled at UCI, and in fact quite bitter about much of his experience, and I can't deny that. But, we're here to celebrate his life.
Right. Yeah, so that was a detour. You're listening to KUCI here on a Subversity program, and we're also being simulcast by KUCR in Riverside. Let's talk about his legacy. How do you see his legacy in the field?
You're asking me?
Catherine? We already touched on that a little bit.
I think it does follow from, the question of why Lyndon made that move. And I think, I know there were frustrations at Irvine, but I know when we talked about it, we had a kind of funny lunch with, former grad student, now chair and senior job recruit. We just started laughing kind of spontaneously at this spectacle at one point, but I also feel like he did feel there were positive things, I think, on both sides.
Yeah.
And he felt like he had accomplished a great deal at Irvine, and I think he did feel good about, for all the problems that persisted, he felt good about the program he had built. And I think
he certainly did.
Many people at this stage in the career, a move is a chance to kind of break new ground, give up, drop some baggage from the past, and just try a new atmosphere. And I think there were things, we're a very different English department, I think, than Irvine's. And that it was, Lyndon, I think, was not really hung up on disciplines, per se, as strongly supportive as he was about the work that African American studies could do. It was kind of like, disciplines were kind of like nations to him. They were there. They were kind of annoying sometimes, but he really just wanted to follow, I think, the line of intellectual power that was open to him. Ask the questions he wanted to ask, and was pretty self-defining, I think, in that. And so I think his legacy, in part, is that the more I've thought about it, that there is. He wasn't hung up on worrying about what is African American studies. It was there, and it could exist in all kinds of venues and all kinds of disciplines and all kinds of campuses. And it was, it's this kind of intense relationship between ideas and people that I think he was so dedicated from. That if people could get together and really think about ideas and ask hard questions and be open and courageous, that things could change. And I think he leaves that legacy both in his published work and in his personal interactions with people, that sitting in the back of the room and asking impossibly complex questions, with a real open-minded, not combative kind of style. And I think that's part of that legacy. So many of us who have seen him as a model for how to do that, how to seriously engage people, that's really, I think, a strong part of what he leaves.
He was soft-spoken, yet he spoke very, intensely.
I mean, he
always had something to say that was profound, it seems. Yeah.
And, he was also just finishing a book on the slave trade, and I don't know what will happen with that. I hope that some people can recover it and
We'll shepherd it through.
I hope so, because it's just so important, the work he was doing in that book. He really will change the whole study of slave trade history. I mean, as Catherine was saying earlier, it's a tremendously important project.
Yeah.
I also wanted to say that
he's very excited about his continued work on that. He wanted to do another chapter. I actually saw him just a fortnight before he died. You know, we were on my deck drinking rum and talking and enjoying ourselves. So it was quite a shock to learn of his death while I was on the road on a research trip. But yeah, we'll certainly try and make sure that have a look at the manuscript, the latest version of his manuscript, and try and get it out.
Yeah, George, you were saying?
Well, I also wanted to talk, I think we're all talking about this obliquely, but what a great friend he was. I mean, a colleague, yes, but much more than a colleague. I mean, even in the short time I was actually his colleague here, I've come to know him over the years, and I just valued him tremendously as a friend. It's a tremendous loss, just from that point of view.
Mm-hmm. Yes, yes.
And just kind of a final note on what Dr. Kinney was, you know, just saying regarding, you know, his experience at Irvine. I think as an undergrad, some of our memories, he was very candid about that in his lectures, too. He would just kind of insert comments here and there about how, you know, just things that kind of made him unhappy or things like that about the program, just kind of as a side, sort of a joke type of thing. So I think even from an undergrad point of view, undergraduate students kind of knew there was, you know, he wasn't quite, you know, but I just remember vividly they had a final sort of conference for him in honor of him when he, right before he left Leela. I think you might have been there.
Both of us.
And just the room was packed. And I just remember, like, I walked in, I was a little late, and of course he was sitting in the back, and there were comments sent from all over the nation, all over the world. People just wanted to, you know, they knew that he had a long, arduous sort of time at Irvine. Not that it was, you know, completely horrible, like Dr. Kinney was saying, but I just, and that was when I had already sent in my acceptance to Riverside. I had already made my decision, and I walked in, and I heard those words, and I just felt like, I get to work with this person. Like, I was just so overwhelmed, you know, and I think I really do, you know, I know he knew he had supporters here at Irvine, and I think just that conference, it just sticks out to me, and I think, you know, he knew that there were people who appreciated him deeply here at Irvine, you know, and I just...
Oh, I was just wanting to add something about what everyone's saying in terms of Lyndon's frankness and, you know, at the personal level and, you know, also at the level of being a mentor. I think that was one of the things that was, you know, we all really valued in Lyndon, you know, to kind of move away from talking about maybe, you know, his stay at Irvine. You know, in terms of being an advisor, you know, you always knew Lyndon was being very frank with you. And because, you know, I just remember when I turned in my dissertation, I turned it into him, and he said, oh, well, you know, he congratulated me. But I think the next thing he said to me is, we need to work on chapter one. You know, that one's weaker than the other ones. But the flip side of that is that when he did praise you and he did have good things to say, you knew he really meant it, right? And so I think there's two sides to that. It's that, you know, there's a sense of being really earnest and really caring, and that kind of care comes through in not, you know, giving you faint praise or, you know, sidestepping what the real issues were. And, you know, I think this is the case with all of his graduate students, that, you know, there are moments where you're wondering, like, will I be able to finish my dissertation? Will Lyndon approve it? But part of that is, you know, I think an intellectual process and a teaching process from him as our mentor, in the sense that, you know, not everything's going to be perfect. And not everything... You know, do we need to seek, you know, 100% approval from him? But, you know, when he was able to give us those, you know, thoughts and, you know, to give us the kind of praise and encouragement we needed, we knew he really meant it, and it wasn't just to kind of move on to the next grad student and so on.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And in fact, thinking over some of my recent teaching experience, it's in fact that that rigor that Lyndon brought to the discipline that really makes that makes me smile right now, because when I get comments that I've been sort of disappointed with at the time, saying things like my classes are too political, or they're too hard, or they're too theoretical, or they're too depressing, from now on, I think I'll actually smile and think that that's something of Lyndon that I'm bringing with me. And I hope that that in fact does stay on with all of us who carry on his legacy.
Yeah. Well, it's his level of engagement. I mean, the way it is that he was rigorous, but also he took everything seriously. He worked hard. He lived hard. He was an amazing person to know, I think. We're all at richer because of knowing him at all.
Yeah. Catherine, when he was a graduate student, did he indicate he really wanted to teach?
Oh, certainly, yeah. You know, I think that, you know, for Lyndon, the classroom was you know, just a kind of, in the best sense, an extension of research, mm-hmm. and that place where, you know, it's one of those rare places where intellectual conversations can go on. And but he was also, I think, always wanted students to know that these weren't, you know, dry, abstract issues or dead books or things that only counted in the test. Mm-hmm. I mean, I don't think anybody would listen to Lyndon and wonder, but what will be on the test? it was always life and work, mm-hmm. I think, together. Mm-hmm. But I think, you know, there's a kind of easy way to do that, and then there's the challenging way. And Lyndon, I don't think, ever stepped down from a challenge in his life. I think, you know, even at Penn, when he had a disagreement with powerful people, he stood his ground and, you know, had good reasons for why he believed the things he did and why something wasn't right, and he would speak up, you know.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's an amazing combination with someone whose personality isn't basically combative, you know, whose personality is warm and welcoming and, you know, again, it's just a really rare person who greets the world that way.
How did his background is in, he was born in Guyana and he went to Canada and grew up there. How did that affect his teaching or research into African American studies?
This is Catherine. I mean, I actually asked Lyndon about that last spring. And, you know, he kind of shrugged it off at one level, but I do think it was key to his, I mean, he shrugged it off in the sense that there wasn't a definable difference in his perspective, right? But I think he did understand that nations to be something less than absolute constructs, mm-hmm. right? And that people and lives and histories and stories are mobile, right? Mm-hmm. And they do cross borders, and that especially as a discipline, that U.S. domestic boundary around African American literature just, or African American studies just didn't make a whole lot of sense as a way to delimit knowledge and,
right.
and the field.
Yeah, but he saw himself, you know, as a child of the African diaspora.
Mm-hmm. Yes, yeah.
He have narrow loyalties in that way. And, of course, his identity extended beyond that and was generous in relation to all oppressed groups.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, his, in a way, his Caribbean roots and the sort of itinerancy of Caribbean peoples contributed to the development of an identity that transcended those sorts of narrow boundaries.
It's also good to be an outsider when you're teaching in the U.S. because you get a different perspective.
Mm-hmm.
Definitely. Or you give a different perspective.
I remember having conversations with Lyndon about precisely this topic, in which we would discuss the differences, and I remember him commenting about the sort of vital difference between growing up as a West Indian within a community of color in a place in which there isn't the sort of surrounding politics of domination in quite the same way that they exist in this country. And I think he really took that with him from his parents and from his family, and, you know, although he grew up in North America, he brought a sort of different perspective to his being and his work, and I think that that's something that he was very aware of, too.
For sure, yes.
And he had, you know, as Catherine has said, he had enormous courage. He was never afraid to stand up for what he believed in, and he was willing to take on, you know, powerful people in actually articulating his positions. And there were always, you know, principled positions. And he was just extraordinarily passionate in a whole number of areas. Very gentle, a very gentle person and a very sensitive person. But profoundly passionate intellectually as well as in terms of his play and so forth, his enjoyment of life. That's what I found so amazing about him, is the extent to which he had this extraordinary intellectual rigor and fierceness, but at the same time, this intensity in relation to pleasure, enjoying company, laughter, music, dancing, and so on, you know, and the gift of friendship. You know, so for me, what I will remember most about Lyndon is his friendship, and the warm spirit that he exuded, and the generosity with which he interacted with people, and, you know, the decency with which he treated people. And it's, you know, you can see all the testimony from his former students, colleagues, and talking about those dimensions of his character.
We're going to play a clip from Sylvester.
With the discussion of music, one of the things we did in contacting Lyndon's friends and colleagues throughout the profession, we actually have 10 pages of tributes, and I obviously we won't be able to read all of them, but one of the things we asked for was a playlist of music, and we started with the Supremes and requested by Fred Moten, and the one musician that was mentioned most often was Sylvester, and this was there's a request by Jason King, Daphne Brooks, and Bridget Cooks, all for Sylvester to be played. So we thought it would be appropriate to play Sylvester, and appropriately, the song is titled "You Are My Friend." And Jason King just has a brief blurb about Lyndon's the relevance of Sylvester to Lyndon, and I'll just read from Jason's statement. Lyndon's paper for a 2004 conference on Sylvester explored how Sylvester forged his unique identity, black, gay, feminine, flamboyant, uninhibited, in the context of the disco era, and how minoritarian subjects have historically managed to create the possible and reaffirm value in humanity in the context of social and political repression. I think that pretty much sums up what we've been talking about in the last few minutes.
I have a comment from one of Lyndon's closest friends, At Irvine, Donna Iliescu. She was the manager, or she still is the manager of African American Studies here at UCI. I, Donna Iliescu, manager of African American Studies, and more importantly, friend of Lyndon, would like everyone to know that for me, Lyndon was beyond special, beyond brilliant, beyond dedicated. He was the most unique and inspirational person I have ever known, and my life has been enriched by knowing him and having him become a part of my family. He helped me get through Thelma Foote's passing last year, and ironically, I will try to embrace and live the advice he gave me then to get through this horrific tragedy. A vast void is now present in African American studies and in my and my family's life, but I'll try hard to keep Lyndon's zest for life alive so that hopefully I might begin to know some of the joy that Lyndon lived in his short life. My sadness cannot be measured. Lyndon, I love you and I miss you. Thank you for being you.
That's great. He also contributed, one of his Kalalu articles was also one of the articles in something called The Greatest Taboo, Homosexuality in the Black Community, a book that was that came out in the 2001, actually. And there he talked about sports, actually. And he did a critique of how kind of cross-dressing was handled. Black men in the mix, bad boys, heroes, sequins, and Dennis Rodman.
I just had a quick comment on that. I think one thing also, you know, in terms of Lyndon's legacy in African-American studies is just the breadth of everything he covered, but also, you know, as we know with Lyndon, in depth, right? Like, he went from slave narratives, you know, covered, you know, 20th century African-American literature, and then, of course, like Dennis Rodman. So you're really getting the whole picture there.
He was always transgressing boundaries and transversing them. Do you see that he will, his legacy will also involve more support? Do you think students will go on and continue to study and research these areas? We see that with the students, former students here or the current students here. How do you see that as impacting future generations of students? Will they be reading his texts?
Absolutely. I think that's something that all of us have kind of been trying to get at with Lyndon, is that he very much lived his work and lived by the theories that he wrote about and taught. And for all of us, I think, for the community of African American studies at large, I really do believe that some of Lyndon's greatest influence is precisely the bringing together of what Winston was talking about and what I was talking about earlier, too, the pleasure and the work. And I think that lives in his work, and it continues to impact the ways in which we all think and the ways in which the discipline at large thinks about itself and about its position within the world.
And to underscore this, I just wanted to read maybe a statement from Daphne Brooks, who's Associate Professor of English and African American Studies at Princeton, and, you know, just to, which speaks to both the legacy of Lyndon, but also, again, this how he impacts the field and future students. So Professor Brooks writes, "As a scholar, his work modeled for me the meaning of freedom, the resolute, gorgeous, and urgent beauty of black song, the genius of black flight that we can trace back to captivity. As a mentor, he showed me the courage of laying it on the line for institutional change, shepherding the next generation of black studies scholars and caring for students. As a person, he radiated warmth and joy and showed me the importance of passing warmth and joy on to others personally as well as professionally."
That's good.
And I think, just, you know, sort of as a final note, I feel like, you know, what Leela's been saying and what everybody's been saying this morning is a lot of what we remember of Lyndon stems from his integrity, and you know, he lived what he talked about in class, you know. And I remember he introduced some of us in his last class to this African philosopher who I had never heard of. His name is, I think it's Kweke. I think I'm pronouncing it wrong, but he talked about him And this particular article, it was talking about sociality as a new way of being, and kind of contrasting that with the way he, you know, previously had dismissed all of, like, Western thought, like, right before that, like, the past 8 weeks of class. And, like, the last week of class, it was my birthday that passed, you know, that day, actually. And we went out to the local pub, and he was living out sociality. He showed us what that meant, you know. And I think that, to me, especially for all the first years, I know all of us can say, it was like looking at the tip of the iceberg. Like, this guy is... He's living what he's preaching. You know, it's not mm-hmm. just material or curriculum, but he believes it, you know, and he wanted to show us, like, all the things he, you know, hated, like mechanism and just things that are robotic and non-human. He lived out what it is to be a human, you know, and he committed to show us that, you know, as a teacher. And I think that, to me, will always, you know, be something that I'll remember about him, and that will affect me as a teacher, you know, so.
Absolutely.
That's for sure. We can also, there's also a statement from Etienne Baliba. Maybe you could read that. He sent a tribute in.
Yeah, and I think this, again, is another testament to Lyndon. And Professor Baliba was explaining, in fact, how he and Lyndon didn't know each other that well, but the kind of impact Lyndon had on him just in a very brief encounter. So... this is what Professor Balibar writes from France. From very far away, just a word to add my thoughts to your morning. My encounters with Lyndon were scarce and too short, although we had a good exchange in Riverside last winter after I gave a talk there. We had planned to continue on more... We planned to continue on more regular basis. I was impressed by his originality, his bold use of words and concepts, and realized how important his contribution to the education of his students and the conversation of scholars at UC had become.
So that was one of the tributes among many from lots of his friends and colleagues who sent them in, and they will be posted online.
Yeah, we just wanted to thank everyone, and we really appreciate everyone taking time to offer their thoughts, and we will be passing them along to his family. And if others of you who are listening to this program want to send your messages, you can send them to us, and we will forward them to his family as well. And we'd like to collect everything for them.
I can put the contact information on the website for Subversity at kuci.org/DTSANG. And thank you very much for participating, Catherine, George, Winston, Arnold, Leela, and Jamie.
Thank you.
Thank you, Dan.
Thank you very much.
Great. Thanks.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye-bye. You are listening to a joint airing from KUCI and KUCR, a remembrance of the life and times of Lyndon Barrett, a professor who was tragically taken away from all of us a few weeks ago. This is Dan Zhang with Subversity here on KUCI 88.9 FM in Irvine. The opinions expressed on the show are not necessarily those of the Regents of the University of California, nor the management of KUCI. We're going to end with Billie Holiday.
Once he dressed in tweeds and drapes, owned a Rolls Royce car. Now he seems quite out of place, like a fallen star. While I worry, plan and scheme over what to do, can't help feeling it's a dream. He's just too good to be true. I'm not much to look at, I'm nothing to see. I'm glad I'm living that night, lucky to be. But I've got a man crazy for me. He's funny that way. I ain't got a dollar, can't save a cent. He doesn't holler, he'd live in a tent. I've got that man.
about me. He's funny that way. Lord, he loves to work and slave for me every day.
KUCR, broadcasting from the University of California, Riverside. We've just been listening to a tribute to Professor Lyndon Barrett, professor of English at UC Riverside, spent a long time at UC Irvine, and we heard in that program hosted by Dan Tsang, program entitled Subversity, broadcasting out of KUCI, a number of colleagues of Dr. Barrett. I want to read a statement here from the Chancellor of the University of California, Riverside, Timothy White. Campus community, I regret to announce the death of Lyndon Barrett, Professor of English. Professor Barrett had joined the UC Riverside faculty only a year ago, after many years as a faculty member at UC Irvine. He embraced his new position in the English department with passion, good humor, and a vision for the future of the study of African American literature and culture at UC Riverside. He was an ideal colleague who quickly established himself as a supportive mentor to junior faculty and a thoughtful presence in department discussions of even the most difficult topics and critical concerns. He was quick to offer to read colleagues' publications or works in progress, and his comments were constructive and rigorous, as only the most valued colleagues can offer. His quick wit and probing conversation brightened social gatherings. The English department at UC Riverside saw him as a bright beacon of the future in a department that prides itself on openness and diversity. His loss at the age of 46 is devastating to the department and to the campus as a whole. Lyndon Barrett's published work was distinguished by its thorough research, breadth of literacy, reference, and incisive interventions into major critical debates regarding race, value, and identity. Professor Barrett's first book, Blackness and Value, Seeing Double, was published in 1999 by Cambridge University Press, one of the most prestigious publishers of literary criticism in the world. By foregrounding the question of value, Professor Barrett offered a critical study of key concepts, including authenticity, voice, vernacular, and otherness, which structure African-American literary studies and its relation to the broader canons of English and American literature. Professor Barrett was just completing his second book, Racial Blackness and the Discontinuity of Western Modernity, which extends the focus on the 20th century black expressive culture in his first book to the historical and philosophical origins of the slave trade in the 18th century. One of the major essays Professor Barrett published from this research carried the resonant title Mercantilism, Federalism, and the Market Within Reasoning, The People and the Conceptual Impossibility of Racial Blackness, and traced the evolution of modernity and slavery as conjoined historical and philosophical events. Professor Barrett's published articles trace the breadth of his influence in African American literary studies, critical theory, American literature, and gay studies. His articles cover topics from the slave narrative and theories of autobiography to homoeroticism in Langston Hughes and Dennis Rodman, to the interdependence of the development of mercantilism and slavery. These essays have appeared in major scholarly journals and edited collections, including Callaloo American Literature, Cultural Critique, and the Yale Journal of Criticism, the College of Humanities, Arts, and Social Sciences, along with the English Department, will be planning a memorial event at UC Riverside in the fall. Sincerely, Timothy P. White, Chancellor, University of California, Riverside, July 15th, 2008. Here at KUCR, we want to thank Susan Brown of the UC Riverside English Department and all the faculty who participated in the program, and all those who mourn the loss of their colleague, Kevin Stockdale and Dan Tsang of KUCI at UC Irvine, the UC Riverside Chancellor, Timothy White. We want to thank here at KUCR, Walter Douglas, Daryl and Taylor. I'm Louis Vandenberg of KUCR, and I want to thank Dr. Lyndon Barrett for his many contributions to so many in his life. This program is dedicated to his memory.